Starting pitcher preview, part one of two. And then we will be done with our position previews. How about that? We're into March. We're closer and closer to opening day. Welcome, everybody, to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast. It is Tuesday, March 6th. And Scott Heath, we have no Chris today, but Scott Heath, you know what's so cool about fantasy baseball? It's almost like you have two teams in one. Almost like you have two drafts in one. You got your hitters and you got your pitchers, right? I mean, it's very different from the other sports in that respect.
Oh, I definitely build a strategy before the draft that intermingles my hitter and pitcher strategy, and so I could not disagree more.
But you have completely different stats for pitchers, you know? Like, you have to draft very differently.
I hear what you're saying, Adam.
Thank you, Scott.
I agree with you, but, you know,
team scam.
This is where Heath's nips reach a new point.
Yeah? Still no, but you, but Heath contradicted himself. You're the no intentional positional strategy guy, but you just said you intermingle your strategies.
Yeah, you do not have your sarcasm meter turned on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right, I'm off today.
Complete and total BS.
Well, you were a very good liar, Heath. Congratulations.
Thank you. It's taken me far in life.
Our email address is fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Today, well, I'm not quite sure what we're going to get to, but we'll probably talk about the top 20 or so pitchers. Tomorrow will be just complete average draft position review. Let's get started with this. Let's talk about your overall strategy. I'm going to let Heath go first,
yeah.
But we're going to turn the sarcasm off because I have no ability to detect it today.
Right.
What is your overall starting pitcher strategy?
Well, in a standard points league, what I really like to do is draft five starting pitchers to go in my lineup, and then I try to draft a starting pitcher or two to also go on my bench. In Roto,
I think the sarcasm meter.
Really crazy. Sometimes I'll draft six starting pitchers in a Roto league, and occasionally I may only draft three or four.
Yeah, well, that's actually an interesting thing is how to put your roster together, your pitching roster together in categories or Roto leagues. Especially if there's no designation, you need this many and of starting pitchers, this many relievers. But, all right, Heath, how do you approach starting pitcher on draft day?
I just told you.
No, you didn't. You just said you fill out your roster. All right, Scott, you're up. Scott's up.
As much as I can remember this year, it varies greatly format to format. So the most exaggerated one is head-to-head points leagues where, and this is something I just started in the last draft, but I love the way it turned out so much. I think I'm going to keep doing it to some degree. Our last head-to-head points mock, I invested 9 of my first 13 picks in starting pitchers. Now, I should point out the first 3 were all hitters because as we talked about recently, you know, there is a clear point where there are some standout hitters and then they cease to exist. But I completely overloaded it to pitching because I feel like that's the one position where there is a clear point where they go from being good and reliable to not good and reliable, and you're just choosing from a bunch of crap. So I wanted to load up on as many potentially high-end, potentially reliable arms as I could, knowing that I like a lot of the late round hitters basically as much as the middle round hitters anyway. So that's the most aggressive one. Now it gets trickier in categories leagues because obviously you need diverse contributions. You're not just taking the complete sum of what a hitter offers. So there's not as much interchangeability among hitters in that format.
Hitters or pitchers?
Among hitters.
Okay.
But, you know, in categories league, you need somebody who steals bases. You need batting average help. You need some power. But in points leagues, none of that matters. You just want the totality of a player's contributions creates more interchangeability there. But head-to-head lineups are obviously smaller than Roto lineups, so I can still go a little more aggressively after pitching there. I would say I want, ideally, 3 of my first 5 or 6 picks to go to starting pitchers. It doesn't always work out that way because, you know, that just the order of the picks, the value doesn't match up right. But that's the ideal. In Roto leagues, you know, maybe only like 2 of my first 5 or 6 picks are starting pitchers because there's so many more hitter spots to fill. But the bottom line across all 3 formats is there is a investment being made early in starting pitching.
you don't care which picks they are, three of your first six picks. Like, you don't care. It doesn't have to be one rounds 1, 3, and 5. It could be rounds 4, 5, and 6.
Well, I mean, I'm not willing to go, like, the first half of the first round, reach for one of the four super aces. If I'm picking in the second half of the first round, yeah, I want to make sure I get one of those four. Mm-hmm. But then, like, I don't see any reason to take a starting pitcher in round two once those four are off the board. So round three becomes the earliest I'd look at it. And a lot of times there are still, you know, you might find a George Springer or a Josh Donaldson or a Corey Seager in round three. And then I'm probably still passing on a pitcher to grab one of those. So really, 4 and 5 are the rounds I'm most looking at. And it gets tough in a roto league because Tommy Pham becomes a priority for me there. That's why I'm only aiming for two starting pitchers in those first 5 or 6 rounds. But in head-to-head leagues, and especially head-to-head points leagues, it's easier to pass up those guys because you don't need the specific, you know, the batting average help and steals potential that a Tommy Pham or potentially a Christian Yelich, somebody like that, provides.
There are a lot in points leagues, a lot of starting pitchers that I would take in the third round. I think there's a tier of them, and a couple of them are almost second rounders for me. Madison Bumgarner, Zach Greinke, Justin Verlander, Carlos Carrasco, Luis Severino, Steven Strasburg, Jacob DeGrom. I'm happy to get all those guys in the third.
And obviously you'd be happy with them as your number one pitcher if you start your team with two hitters, right?
Yes.
But would you be okay with them as your number two pitcher if, let's say, you take Bryce Harper in round one and Chris Sale in round two, and here you are in round three, you've got a pitcher and a hitter. Do you take the Strasburg, Bumgarner, Severino, Verlander, Greinke group? Maybe I forgot someone. Or do you go with a hitter at that point?
If Bumgarner or Greinke or Verlander are there, I'm probably taking the second pitcher.
I mean, so that's a difference, right, from previous years, potentially taking two pitchers with your first three picks?
This is only in points also. In roto, and especially in head-to-head categories, I have no interest in doing that.
This is something I started talking about last year, and I feel like it's just become, widespread practice more this year, is that, like, the pitchers aren't being allowed to pitch as deep into games anymore. This is something we've talked about a lot through the preseason. I've talked about how I don't see Lance McCullers ever being like a 180 inning pitcher. The 180 inning, you know, we've lost about 10 pitchers a year, guys who are throwing 180 innings. And then, you know, the few holdovers who are still throwing 200 innings, that becomes even more advantageous, especially since most of those are ones who excel at strikeout rate too. So they're winning by so much at strikeouts, and usually with great percentage stats too, that the gap between the haves and the have-nots at starting pitcher is enormous. Yeah. And yeah, there are a lot more risks attached to pitchers inherently. It's why in the past, historically, people like me have told you to avoid pitching in the early rounds. But it's just, it's gotten to a point where these pitchers who were kind of grandfathered into the old way of doing things and have done it so well that they get to keep doing it. They're just so far ahead of everybody else.
And that's what makes the top four really stand out. Kershaw, Scherzer, Sale, and Kluber, is that, you know, we do expect a lot of innings from them. Although Chris Sale pitched 214 and a third innings last year, and this is the most amazing stat. We gave this out like a month ago, but in case you're new to the show, Chris Sale, 214 innings, led baseball last year. Excluding 1981 and 1994, which are both strike-shortened seasons, that's the fewest to lead baseball in Major League Baseball history. It was amazing what happened. And look, maybe Scherzer would have thrown more than that. Maybe Kershaw would have thrown more than that. Even Kluber had a DL stint. But the bottom line is, the guys get hurt every year. 214 and a third innings pitched, fewest to lead baseball in baseball history, excluding a couple of strike-shortened seasons. That has changed things. Now, Bumgarner, I think, you know, if he didn't have the shoulder injury last year, if he didn't pitch kind of worse than what we'd expected, worse than what we had been seeing from him after coming back from the shoulder injury with his lowest velocity in years, maybe he'd be part of this group too. But I just don't, you know, you can't really put him there. So we'll get into all of that. And those first four pitchers are the only ones that are going in the first two rounds. Kershaw's going 7th overall. Scherzer 10th, Sale and Kluber are going 13th and 14th overall in Fantasy Pros ADP. And number five is Bumgarner. He's going 26th, followed just behind him by Steven Strasburg. And those are your first six pitchers off the board. Kershaw and Scherzer in round one, Sale and Kluber in round two, early round two, and Bumgarner and Strasburg 26th and 27th. Plenty of time for ADP. So for me, you know, I've definitely changed the way I draft pitchers. I draft a lot more of them, you know, early. And I want to be good. A lot of times I look at the mock drafts that we've done, and I look at your teams compared to mine, and I often feel like you guys have better lineups than I do, but I have better pitching. And I don't know what's going to win. I don't know how it's going to play out. Could easily be wrong. But my philosophy is, like, unless they change the baseballs, which I hope we get some clarity on during the preseason, haven't really heard spring training, haven't really heard much about it, I still expect a lot of offense this year, especially with the limited mound visits. And I feel like I'll be able to pick up hitters off waiver wires much, much more easily than I'll be able to pick up pitchers. So I do like the early investment. But there's two. Okay, I'll pause there and let you guys react to that, and then I'll follow it up with one final thought. So, yes, I have been prioritizing pitcher a lot in any format because I think I'll be able to do better on waivers with hitters than pitchers.
Yeah, I would say you're more likely to luck into a game-changing hitter off waivers than you are a pitcher.
Right. You're just also more likely to lose your early investment in pitcher in May for the season.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, it's definitely true. The other point I was going to make is that there are two ways to sort of prioritize pitching. Some people have been asking, and I know you guys read an email about it yesterday, do I take two of the top four super aces with my first two picks? Do I take, you know, Kershaw and Sale or Kluber and Sale, whatever it is? You could go with a pitcher in rounds two and three. I don't know that I want to do that. I think I personally am more likely to maybe not even take a pitcher in the first two rounds because, you know, as much as we talk about the drop-off at pitcher, it also exists at hitter. In the third round, it gets much worse. But maybe rounds three through six, I'm taking three starting pitchers. So,
yeah, that's often the way it goes. I mean, it just depends who's there. I mean, I'm not going to pass up one of the big four if I'm picking at the back end of the first round. You know, whether it's my first pick or my second pick that I'm using it on, I'm getting one of them. And, you know, it might be it like I said, it might not be worth it in round three either if one of those great hitters just happens to last longer than I expect, maybe because other people are drafting pitchers. There are, in my mind, at least 17, I'll say 17 pitchers in a points league, 16 in a categories league, where they're either aces or they're near aces. They can at least approach that 200 inning mark with more than a strikeout per inning and good ratios.
That was going to be my next question. How many pitchers are worthy of being your number one starting pitcher?
The one who, you know, I say 17 for one format or the other, the one that kind of straddles the fence there is Dallas Keuchel. Since he is such a big innings eater, but not a big strikeouts guy. And because he's, when I say he's an innings eater, I mean on a start by start basis, there are some health concerns that might leave him with a lower innings total,
but you're,
which would hold back the strikeout total as well.
Are you including Mets pitchers in those 16 or 17?
I am including two Mets pitchers.
And like we're talking about guys that could be 200 inning guys and have big strikeout numbers. And I think it's really difficult to expect that from either one of them, but I have them ranked in my top 17. I think you can put a Dallas Keuchel and a Noah Syndergaard next to each other in the rankings, knowing that that's completely different things that you're hoping for from the two of them.
No, I mean, I think, like, I wouldn't necessarily bet on 200 innings from Syndergaard because he hasn't done it before, but if he's healthy enough to do it, the Mets are going to let him do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's see. With Syndergaard, what's his high? Like 180 something?
Like, and I don't mean to parse the details because, you know, Heath makes an important point. Like, you're not just penciling these guys in for 200 innings.
He threw 33
but only,
last year.
I'm saying only so many pitchers are capable of throwing 200 innings, and I believe these 17 are all capable of it.
You're right. I disagree with that notion. I don't think we have anything to suggest that Syndergaard is capable of throwing that hard and that violently 200 innings. I hope that he can. I think that would be great, but he's got a max of 183. And he threw 33 last year, and he's throwing 104 miles an hour or something in March. I don't expect that.
All right, but, well, that's a guy you guys really differ on. You, Scott's got Syndergaard 10th, and you have him 15th.
And I have him like 8th in Roto.
Because, I mean, 180 innings is still pretty exemplary in these days. So,
right, but it's not the argument we were making.
He's one of the better
guys.
Percentage pitchers.
I think, like, he's one of the best. There are 40 guys who can go 180 innings.
Yeah, I think you're being kind of nitpicky, but okay.
All right, well, let's go. So how many pitchers are worthy of being your number one starting pitcher? Scott says 16 or 17, right?
I wouldn't want all of them to be my number one. Like, ideally, I want three of those guys. Two I could settle for in a roto league. But I think that's where the biggest drop-off is after those 17 or 16.
I'll say 10.
So, well, Scott wants three of his top 17 or 16. Heath, you want blank of your top blank.
That's not – my brain doesn't work that way.
I think it does more than you really tend to admit. Like, I think when you're drafting, this has to be on your mind.
No, I understand that's the way you guys look at it. That's not –
like, it's not a drop-dead number for me, to be fair.
I understand. I don't go into
the
draft thinking I want to get five of these guys.
Well, okay, think of it a different way. When the draft is over and you're looking over your roster, do you find yourself saying, man, I wish I had one more of these pitchers?
No.
Okay.
All right. And I will say,
always happy with your team.
There are drafts where I have taken two of the top four, and I'm good with that. There are drafts where I haven't taken, like, I've had drafts where Carlos Martinez was my ace.
Well,
I'm okay with that too.
Let me bring up this draft. This is our head-to-head categories draft. I know your team is. Did you actually draft that, Heath?
Yes,
team?
Absolutely.
I did draft it
vertically or horizontally. I was unable to stay up for that draft.
I'm just going to say, like, I don't think you can win the league with this staff, with this pitching staff.
I think especially in a head-to-head categories league, starting pitcher is probably overrated.
Yeah, but you don't have any relievers. Like, you have Cody Allen and Aroldis Chapman. It's not like you went RP heavy. So here's Heath.
You can only have two relievers in that because of the way the stupid positions were set up.
Oh, okay. All right, great. So still, I think you're going to be way behind in starting pitching. You have Garrett Cole, Lance McCullers, John Lester, Tanner Roark, Taijuan Walker, Jordan Montgomery, and Cole Hamels. Garrett Cole, yep. McCullers, Lester, Roark, Walker, Montgomery, Hamels. You don't look at that team and say, man, I wish I had made more of an investment in pitching?
Oh, no, not at all. I think that team specifically, when you're talking about in a head-to-head categories league, Garrett Cole, it would not surprise me at all if going into next year we're ranking Garrett Cole as a top 12 starting pitcher. Lance McCullers, when he's healthy, has got a very good chance of being a top 12 starting pitcher. John Lester is a pretty solid number two or number three. I don't have a problem with that rotation at all.
I feel like this is the argument I had with Chris last year. It's like, yes, best case scenario, you have a good rotation, but
I don't need the best case scenario from all those guys, though. Give me the best case scenario from two or three of them, and I'll find some other guys at the end. And I don't have to find guys for the rest of the season. I got to find guys for week 13. I got to find guys for week 14.
Yeah, and then my pitching in that league is Max Scherzer, Noah Syndergaard, Dallas Keuchel, Rich Hill. So very different approaches there.
Right.
We should probably talk about our favorite, you know, we'll do that tomorrow. I think we'll look at teams that we've drafted and not necessarily our favorite pitching staffs, but maybe our favorite total teams and the pitching staff on those teams. Which starting pitcher do you find yourself drafting often?
It ends up being Robbie Ray, I guess. And I could go deeper probably and find ones more like personal favorites of mine, but it just feels like Robbie Ray is often the one of the last to go from that tier, you know, that second tier that runs through number 16. Mm-hmm. And
it's
maybe I trust him a little more than most.
Right.
It might be changing with the humidor, but it doesn't appear to have changed yet. I just think he's, like, inning for inning, he's one of the top five strikeout pitchers in the game. And there were some hard contact concerns, but those have been definitely dampened by the humidor.
When we were talking about that tier originally, it was about the guys, the 200 inning guys. He has almost no chance. Like 170 is what you're hoping for out of Robbie Ray. He's left-handed Lance McCullers, most likely.
Yeah, I don't know. I like, how many starts did he make last year?
28.
So, you know, give him four more starts.
So he could have got to 180 last year.
Yeah,
he could have.
Yeah,
just barely.
You know, if you're at 180, you're within striking distance of 200. You know, He had one, two, three, four, five, six starts last year of seven innings or more. That's above average.
Yeah, and he's got Robbie Ray has major home road split differences. Like, just he's just been so much better at on the road. So the humidor helps. Like, I wasn't going to draft Robbie Ray before the humidor because there are some real underlying concerns. I mean, he walks so many guys. He gave up so much hard contact, and his BABIP and his strand rate. I mean, an 85% strand rate and a 267 BABIP. So I kind of felt like this guy could be a bust, but the humidor really does help.
I think you have to expect around a 3.5 to 3.7 ERA from Robbie Ray.
Scott, I think Scott would probably think lower than that. 3.5, 3.7
ERA? No, I think,
ERA.
You know, that's a fair expectation. Okay. But, so, like, I still think because, it's kind of like another Chris Archer situation. Like, right. He's probably going to have a high 3s ERA as well, mm-hmm. but the strikeout numbers are going to be so advanced that...
But Archer throws 200
innings.
The
overall package is still close to ace-like.
Heath, how about you? Who are you drafting?
I would say that it's another Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher. It's the one Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher that no one wants to make any adjustment for the humidor. It's Taijuan Walker.
Okay.
And it's not that I'm making a significant investment in him. His ADP is around 200 overall. I think his ERA is probably around 3.5, 3.7. He won't strike as many batters out as Robbie Ray, but he's available like 15 rounds later.
I haven't really found the guy. I mean, I said I love Jacob deGrom, like that was my guy, but I don't know. I might back off that a little bit. What I like about deGrom is that his strikeout rate went way up last year, but he, Jose Quintana, and one other player, Carlos Martinez, they had their best strikeout rates and their worst ERAs as starting pitchers last year, so don't really know what to make of that, but I really like deGrom. I just don't know that he separates himself from like the guys that are going right around him, like Severino and Verlander. For me, it's more about the guys I'm avoiding because there are so many good starting pitchers at the top, like this tier that Scott talks about, you know, top 16 or so. They're great players. So I like to find the ones that I think are the riskiest and just avoid them. I have been drafting a lot of Carlos Carrasco. I know he is risky, but I think he's more of a – I don't think he's a performance risk, put it that way. I don't think he's going to have a bad year pitching. I guess I could see him missing time and – not giving you the innings, but if the innings are there, I'm not worried about performance from Carlos Carrasco.
Well, I mean, the thing is, Adam, like these 16, you know, let's leave out the top four and just talk about the group of 12, right? Mm-hmm. We're leaving out the top four. We're leaving out Keuchel because he's more of a points league guy. And we're just talking about Greinke, Verlander, Bumgarner, Severino, Strasburg, Syndergaard, Carrasco, DeGrom, Darvish, Ray, Archer, and Carlos Martinez. Like all of those guys tend to go within a two-round span, rounds three and four. Maybe somebody like Robbie Ray will spill into round five. But, like, I don't think there's a lot of room to be choosy because they all go so fast. You know, you kind of just...
Well, but you might get up... No, so this is what I'm trying to say. Okay, first of all, just to clarify, according to Fantasy Pros ADP, which is Roto ADP, we're actually talking about more rounds. We're talking basically rounds three to... six, the beginning of round six, 3 to 5, I'll say. And okay. All I'm saying, when you come up to draft, you might have five of them in your queue, and you have to decide which of these guys you like. And for me, I eliminate the risky guys because, you know, they're all good. So for me, I'm just like, I'm not going to take the risky guy. Now, Syndergaard is interesting because, yes, he's the riskiest. He's also the best, probably, on a per-inning basis. But, like, I consider Chris Archer too risky because he's given up 37 home runs on the road over his last 2 years.
Yeah, particularly in a categories league, you're not going to count on him for ERA help.
Yes.
I think in a points league, he's actually pretty safe because you know he's going to give you the innings.
I kind of consider Justin Verlander risky because there is a long track record of pitchers pitching through the World Series, having big innings totals, and struggling the next year. I don't think he's that risky, but I'm going to favor DeGrom over him because there is that thing going on. In fact, it happened to DeGrom 2 seasons ago.
Well, you know who I think is the safest of that group, the one I ranked 5th overall because of it, is Zach Greinke.
Yeah, I mean, I'm totally on board. You made the case like a month ago, and I love it.
It became easier to buy the case with the humidor.
Yeah,
right?
It did.
I do think the whole Verlander-DeGrom thing, I don't know how safe DeGrom is.
Sure, there's definitely an argument. I consider him a little safer than Verlander, so I go with him. That's how
I draft. He's not 100% healthy right now, is he?
Well, who of this group is the most is worry-free, is completely worry-free? And I don't think there is one.
Nobody.
Right? I mean,
if you're comparing, if the group ranges from Zach Greinke to Robbie Ray, then I think you have to call guys like Greinke, Verlander, Carrasco worry-free in comparison to the guys they're being tiered with. Because it's not like Robbie Ray is not in the same tier as Zach Greinke.
Well, he is for me. I understand, you know, there are still reasons to differentiate the value there, but
there's a wide chasm between the two of them.
No, I don't think it's a wide chasm. I think it's a narrow chasm.
If last year's Robbie Ray's overperformance of all peripherals is real, then he is in this group.
But I like I said, I have Greinke fifth, so I agree he's the most worry-free of them. But, I mean, he's just a year removed from a 450, 430 ERA, whatever it was.
And so he's probably the oldest, or one of the oldest. He and Verlander.
He is the oldest, yeah.
But I agree. I mean, he's...
Oh, Verlander's older, sorry.
All right, so who are you guys avoiding?
So my last ones from the tier are Darvish, Ray, Archer, Carlos Martinez. Those are the ones, like if I get them as my number one, I've probably messed up. I'm probably disappointed at that point. I would much rather have them as number two or even more like a number three. But at the same time, that like right after they go off the board is where I see the biggest drop off at starting pitcher where, you know, you're crossing these fingers. These guys throw just 180, much less 200. And so I still end up drafting them a lot because it's the end of a tier, and that's how the tiers work.
So you don't necessarily want, you said it was Archer, Ray, and who? Or just
it
them?
Was Archer, Ray, Darvish, and Carlos Martinez.
All right, you don't want them as your number one, but you're totally cool with them as a two and maybe even a three if you go real heavy upside pitcher.
I mean, Robbie Ray is my third with the upside that's presented there with the humidor. Like,
yeah,
I think Robbie Ray could totally be in the Cy Young conversation this year.
And if you have Robbie Ray as your third, then you have made a concerted effort to get starting pitcher early in the first six rounds, which you said earlier. You're totally, like, especially in a points league, you want three pitchers in your first six or seven picks. Heath, how about you? Who are you avoiding?
I guess it's Robbie Ray. I don't think he's in the same tier as those guys, so I'm not going to pay for that type of prize. I think almost everything he did last year was as unsustainable as what happened to him the year before. In fact, if you look at his FIP, it's basically identical from 2016 to 2017. Right around a 3.7 pitcher, a 3.7 ERA with 175 innings. He's going to have to strike a lot of batters out again to be anywhere close to that valuable.
And he'll strike out a lot of batters, but Heath, do you take Robbie Ray and take that FIP and now put a humidor in? And since I mentioned he's been much better on the road, do you give him a better ERA?
I think, you could drop it down to, 3.5? I think that'd be fine.
Okay.
I think you still have all the other same concerns about not the thing that rhymes with FIP, which is whip. And with all those walks, it's going to be high.
Yeah.
And it's more difficult to pile up a bunch of wins when you generally go six innings.
You know what else I think is cool about this group of pitchers? If you're in a categories league or a Roto's league, you can pair them. To make, like I've said this before, Robbie Ray, Dallas Keuchel, to me, is a really good pairing. You're going to have Keuchel with his amazing ERA and whip, and Ray with the strikeouts, and I think that's a good pairing. And I think Darvish and Ray are kind of similar. Like, Darvish and Keuchel would be a good one. You know, so you've got, like, between Archer, Darvish, and Ray, that's kind of interesting. Archer, Darvish, and Ray are going in the end of that tier, and they are, like, the three of the best strikeout pitchers in baseball. So you might not get the great ERA and whip from them, but you can pair them with another pitcher who will make up for that, and that's a cool way to attack it.
And it's mainly the strikeouts putting them in that tier, the combination of strikeouts, and certainly in the case of Darvish and Archer, innings. You know, if they weren't getting strikeouts, they'd basically be, you know, they'd probably be down where John Lester and Johnny Cueto are.
But Darvish, to me, like, has a real chance for ERA improvement. I don't know how you guys feel. But I just love him going to the National League. And, you know, he's been a three. Like, he had a 283 ERA in 2013. You know, he was better before Tommy John.
I have the sneaking suspicion that we haven't seen the best of Yu Darvish yet because of the timing of so many things. Tommy John surgery, when it seemed like he was becoming the preeminent strikeout pitcher in baseball. And then apparently he's had mechanical issues since coming back from that the Dodgers were working on after acquiring him down the stretch last season. Now he's going to have a different pitching coach he's working with. So, yeah, I mean, that bat missing ability is probably tops in the league when he's mechanically sound and healthy.
Yeah,
and it could lead to some big things, sure.
So I'm going to ask you for sleepers, breakouts, and busts in just a second. First, I'm going to tell you about SeatGeek, the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event, concert, sports, comedy, theater. Guess what? I am going to a game on Thursday. I haven't been to a sporting event in a while. I am going to the ACC tournament in Brooklyn to see my Miami Hurricanes probably lose to probably UNC. But that's fine. I'm going to use SeatGeek to get there. And I've already used the promo code FANTASY. That promo code FANTASY, when you download the SeatGeek app and you use that promo code, it will get you $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Again, the promo code is FANTASY. But it doesn't matter if you've already used it because you're still getting the best prices because SeatGeek searches multiple ticket sites, compares prices, and gets you the best deals, grades every ticket based on value. So when I looked on the app at the tickets, I saw the big green dots that said, these are the best values, check out these prices. And there's one for like $44 on the upper deck, so I'm probably going to be getting a couple of those. And it's just like, it's a really easy app to use. You just put all the tickets on your app and everything. It's just so simple to go to a game. Just a few clicks and you're at a game, basically. So every purchase is fully guaranteed. Download the SeatGeek app. Use the promo code FANTASY, promo code FANTASY on SeatGeek for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Fellas, your favorite sleeper starting pitcher. Heath, you can start.
I already said him as the guy that I'm drafting most often, but I'll say Taijuan Walker just because I think his ADP fits back down around 200. I have him ranked as about a 13th round pitcher. He was a mid-threes ERA last year. He still has some room for growth, but even if he doesn't reach that, he'll outperform his ADP.
Scott, favorite sleeper?
Is it too high end to say Zach Godley?
No, I don't think so.
Because that's it.
He's like a 10th round.
I like, of course.
He's like a 10th round pick right now.
Yeah.
He has moved
Okay,
up.
So here's my Zach Godley take. First of all, I think there might not be a pitcher who lives up to his name more this year than Zach Godley.
Wow. That is high
praise. He basically did last year, too, with both a swinging strike rate and a ground ball rate, top 10 in baseball. Like that, you know. That along with control, like those three things are, if a pitcher's doing well there, he's a great pitcher. And Zach Godley, I mean, his walk rate's not bad, so it's not like that's a real concern. Two of those three, he's elite. One, he's fine. And I mean, you just look at the ERA whip, the strikeout rate, they're all great. The reason I think he didn't get enough attention is because for some reason he had a sub 500 record with a very good Diamondbacks team. And because, you know, nobody heard of him before last year. He didn't really, you know, it's not like he had a rotation spot from the get-go. He was kind of this pitcher who emerged mid-season, just, you know, in what was supposed to be just a spot start, and he just dominated from there. I think, you know, just if before even the Humidor news broke, he looked like a pitcher who, to me, could climb into the top 12 this year with a starting job from the get-go. But now you throw that in and, you know, even weaker contact to be expected at home from this guy who already doesn't put the ball in the air, already misses a ton of bats. And I think I think even in the 10th round, people are really sleeping on the potential for him. He could be, you know, a top five pitcher in the NL.
All right. Zach Godley and Taijuan Walker are our sleepers. Heath, who's your favorite breakout starting pitcher?
I'll go with Jose Berríos. Threw 185 innings last year between AAA and the majors. Think he has an excellent chance to bump that up to close to 200 this year. Would expect an ERA right around the mid threes. I think he has a good chance to win a lot of games on a Twins team that I expect to challenge the Indians for the AL Central.
Jose Berríos for Heath. Scott, who's your favorite breakout?
Luis Castillo.
Oh, I thought you were going with a blakeout with Blake Snell.
Well, that's the thing about starting pitchers. There's 80 of them, right? 80
yeah.
of them then are probably going to be drafted into 12-team league. So I have a number of sleepers and breakouts, but Luis Castillo is my favorite. What we saw from him down the stretch for the Reds last year, I think it was in 14, 15 starts, something like that. was just magical. Just magical. Guy throws, can hit triple digits on the radar gun. His changeup already looks like it may be the best swing and miss changeup in baseball from, you know, a guy just breaking into the league. And he had over his minor, like it was great enough just how he performed in the majors. But if you look at his minor league track record, an elite control pitcher too, that didn't manifest when he reached the majors last year, in part because if you look at his first few games, they were against some of the most dominant offenses in baseball. He certainly held his own against them. The walks were a little on the high side, probably some nerves there, probably pitching around some tough hitters. But my point is, as good as he was last year, one of the things he's best at, which is throwing strikes consistently, he didn't even demonstrate yet. So I think there's the potential, like, if we're looking for this year's Luis Severino, it may very well be Castillo.
All right, Castillo had a 3.12 ERA, 98 strikeouts, and a 1.08 whip in 89 and a third. That's amazing. Scott mentioned his first seven starts. They were against very tough opponents. Nationals, Brewers, Rockies on the road at Arizona. Nationals again, Diamondbacks, Yankees. Six of those seven teams were in the top eight in runs scored. And then he had a 4.05 ERA. Then his last eight starts, Castillo had a 2.37 ERA, 15 walks, 53 strikeouts in 49 and a third. And I think, you know, you compare him to Luis Severino, who had a terrible second year when it looked like he could be a breakout in 2016, and then he had an ERA over 8 as a starter. Not as a reliever, but as a starter. One thing that Severino didn't have was a third pitch. And Castillo has a slider and a changeup that he throws. So I think that helps make him a little bit different than the 2016 version of Severino, which was a total bust. All right, so we have Jose Berríos and we have Luis Castillo. I know Scott likes Blake Snell also in this conversation. Heath, how do you feel about Blake Snell?
Oh, I like him a lot. I think that there's an opportunity for him to be a top 20 starting pitcher.
Yeah, I'm targeting Blake Snell. I want a lot of Blake Snell. Moved over on the mound. Really helped with his control. Last 13 starts, he had a 3.31 ERA, 22 walks, 68 strikeouts, 1.11 whip in 73 and a third. That's Blake Snell. How about a bust? Heath, you can go first. Who's a bust at starting pitcher?
I think this one's pretty easy. It's Shohei Ohtani. He's being drafted as the number 20 starting pitcher off the board in roto leagues. And at the start of the seventh round, I understand if you were in a daily lineup league and you thought that maybe he could return value. I don't even think he's going to be worth that in daily leagues. I think it's highly unlikely that he's successful in his very first exposure to major league action as both a hitter and a pitcher. And it's possible he's not very good at either in this early on.
All right. So would you rather have Berríos or Ohtani?
Berríos.
Scott, would you rather have Godley or Ohtani?
Godley.
Scott, who's your bust?
My bust, and sorry to do this, Heath. My bust is Jose Berríos.
It's Jose Berríos.
Jose Berríos is the one I do not want. And here's why. Jose Berríos last year was amazing when he first got called up. He was doing some of the things he did at AAA. And it was great, and everybody was excited. It was like, oh, he finally overcame those issues he had as a rookie the year before. And look at this, 2.67 ERA through his first eight starts. But if you look at what happened thereafter, final 18 appearances, 17 of them starts, a 4.61 ERA, a lot of walks, just not very good pitching for, you know, two-thirds of the time he was up. And if you look at the underlying numbers, Jose Berríos, I mean, yeah, solid K per nine, but the swinging strike rate was below average. And it just makes me wonder which of those two versions of Berríos we saw last year was the real version. If he's not missing bats at even an average rate, I'm not sure he's ready to be a standout in fantasy. And minor league numbers are great. Top prospect, only 23 years old. There's a chance he takes a step forward this year, and this prediction looks silly. But you know, just based on what I saw last year, I'm not willing to invest in Berríos what everybody else seems to be. I think there are similar upside pitchers who have had more encouraging results available at the same point or later.
Berríos is going somewhat early. He's going in round 9, 102nd overall. in between Jake Arrieta and Alex Wood. So it's Arrieta is the 24th pitcher off the board. Berríos is 25th, although Berríos is almost a full round behind Arrieta, and then Alex Wood is 26th. So
By the way, I'm not beyond calling Jake Arrieta a bust at this point.
Even there, even 90-something overall?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was willing to give him a pass for last year's drop and strikeout rate because he made some adjustments in the second half, got more ground balls, the ERA was really low, probably too low to be true, but whatever. But now we're about a third of the way through spring training and he still doesn't have a team. What kind of work is it going to take to get him up to starting in games again? And then you have that diminished skill concern on top of it. Yeah, I'm skipping over Jake Arrieta in a lot of drafts, I'm finding.
Oh, you know who I'm skipping over? And actually, I want to get Heath to respond to the Berríos comments, what Scott doesn't like about Berríos. But I am skipping over David Price. I just can't see how he stays healthy. He was supposed to get Tommy John surgery last season. He would have gotten it if he had been younger, but they decided at his age not to have it. And he goes, I mean, it's Arrieta, Berríos, Alex Wood, and then it's David Price. And that's actually a little, now we're talking like round 10.
Wait, you say he would have had, he had a torn ligament in his elbow? I don't remember reading.
Yeah, it was partially torn. And they said that, you know, the doctors would have recommended Tommy John for him, if not for his age. So okay. I can double check on
I mean,
that.
I I don't think I had drafted him yet because I had some of the same fears you do, just I didn't have those specifics to accompany it.
Well, I could be wrong. We'll double check on that. But yeah, still, I don't trust him to stay healthy. And you look at his ERA just as a starting pitcher the last 2 years. You take away the relief work he did. You know, he had a 3.82 ERA as a starter. And in 2016, he had a 3.99 ERA as a starter. He's not young. He's 32. He had a lot of mileage. Yeah, I think David Price could be great for a short period of time. I don't think he's going to return ninth round value for you. But that is a little bit later, actually, than when I've been seeing him go, I feel, in our drafts. Ninth round's much more tempting. But, like, seventh round, no way on David Price. Heath, you want to respond to Scott's concerns about Berríos?
Yeah, it's kind of like when we were talking about with Dallas Keuchel and the high strikeout pitchers and how guys may be in the same range, but they're completely different pitchers. I'm not really sure there's much difference between Robbie Ray and Jose Berríos. Berríos last year between AAA and the majors threw more innings than Ray has ever thrown in his major league career. His WHIP would have been the second best of Ray's career. His FIP was 3.84, which was a tenth of a point higher than Robbie Ray's last year. So, yeah, I think Robbie Ray and Jose Berríos have a lot of similarities in terms of value.
But what about the K per nine, the swinging strike rate?
K per nine and swinging strike rate are two things in Ray's favor. I would expect more innings from Berríos. I expect a lower WHIP from Berríos.
Okay. With that said, well, I don't want to get too far into ADP since we'll do it tomorrow. So I'm going to give you guys some stats and you tell me what they mean to you. I also want to tell you all about HQ. I've been watching a lot of HQ. It's my morning routine now. Just put on my CBS Sports app, my CBS Sports HQ on my Roku. You can get it on Apple TV or Amazon Fire, on your phone, on other connected devices, on CBSSportsHQ.com. It's great. It's a highlight show. It tells you what's going on in the sports world. It's a new way to get the latest scores, news, and highlights on all your favorite sports. It's CBS Sports HQ, 24/7 streaming sports information channel, always on, and it's free. It is completely free. You can stream it anytime on our app, on, like I said, Apple TV, Roku, your phone, or other connected devices. If you just want to check it out before downloading it, CBSSportsHQ.com. But I'm really enjoying it. They've had great coverage of the NFL Combine. We have a lot of really great experts, former NFL players, former NBA players. We have great college basketball coverage. We have one of our college basketball guys talking about Cincinnati, and I think I'm going to maybe take Cincinnati to go kind of far in my bracket. So thank you, HQ, for that. We'll see if that works out. But check it out, CBS Sports HQ. I think any sports fan will really like it. All right, some starting pitching stats. Clayton Kershaw pitched 15 and two-thirds innings in the World Series, pitched on 2 days rest in Game 7, and threw 43 pitches. Are you concerned about that as you look at Kershaw going into 2018?
I mean, the biggest reason I think that Kershaw is no longer in a tier to himself, and we talk about the Super Four instead of just Kershaw and whoever follows, is because, yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily the postseason innings that concern me, but just innings in general for Kershaw. Like, he, three of the last 4 years, he's missed time with the same back issue. So you kind of just have to factor that into the projections at this point. And inning for inning, he's still the best pitcher in baseball, still has an advantage over those other three. But if you give the other three the innings advantage, they're about the same.
Okay, this one, this stat. Luis Severino, inning pitched last three seasons. 161 and two-thirds. 151 and one-third. 209 and a third. Nearly 60 innings more in 2017 when you include the postseason than 2016. Heath, does that concern you with Severino?
Yeah, I think it adds to the, wow, he did something he's never done before last year. Because it wasn't just the innings, but the strikeouts were at a level that he'd never done before. The walks were at a level. He had a breakout. And it was a breakout that was way, way outside of what we'd seen in the limited action in the couple years before. And the innings were also way outside of that as well. So it definitely, it adds maybe just a tiny bit of injury risk. And there's certainly some regression risk in like seven different areas.
Yeah, I think when you look at what made Severino break out, in my opinion, it was the addition of a changeup, and a very good changeup. And he was a two-pitch pitcher before that. Right-handed two-pitch pitchers, they have a tough time surviving. So that's something to keep an eye on in spring training when we see guys who are working on a new pitch, who are developing a new pitch. It can really take them to a new level. So, you know, put it on the back burner. Justin Verlander threw 242 and two-thirds innings, including the postseason. The guy that scares me a little bit when I think of Verlander is Wainwright. Well, all those guys, but Wainwright. But I think Wainwright had like a 270 inning season, including the postseason, in their World Series run. So at least it wasn't that high. But we're starting to get a lot of mileage on the arm of Justin Verlander. He's looked great so far in spring training. Here we are on March 6th. But does that concern you, the innings/World Series hangover for Verlander?
I mean, I'd be lying if it said it didn't mean nothing to me, but...
Don't lie, then. Like, tell the truth, Scott.
Well, I mean, Justin Verlander's pitched deep into the postseason before, and, you know, he's made it to 35 with heavy innings totals over and over again. He still throws high 90s. Like, at some point, it's going to end for Justin Verlander. I don't know that it's reasonable to assume it'll be this year because of this, you know?
Heath, does Verlander just seem like the kind of guy who... is a physical freak, defies conventional wisdom?
Yeah, I'm basically just viewing him as a badass that the normal limitations do not apply to.
Okay. Next stat. I mentioned this one earlier. What do you guys think? Jacob DeGrom. Oh, no, I didn't. All right, I'm going out of order. That's fine. Jacob DeGrom, Jose Quintana, and Carlos Martinez had their best strikeout rates, but their worst ERAs as starting pitchers. DeGrom, Quintana, and Martinez, bunch of strikeouts, higher ERAs.
Yeah, Quintana in particular, I think, is a very nice regression candidate. And he's been a guy for his entire career that, well, he should win more games than that. He still just won 11-11 last year, 7-3 with the Cubs. I think he does win more games this year. I believe his ERA will be back under 4, probably in the mid-3s range, like so many other starting pitchers. For Quintana in particular, it matters.
I would guess all three of these have their highest ever home run rates, too. I'm trying to confirm them one by one. I know DeGrom certainly did.
Yeah, he did.
Like, they're kind of just following the league-wide trend then, right? More strikeouts, more home runs, which, of course, would raise the ERA.
But you know what I liked about DeGrom? I'm pretty sure he had the home runs went up, but the fly balls really didn't, and neither did the hard contact. So that kind of felt like bad luck to me.
To a degree. But, I mean, if home runs are up, every pitcher is going to be affected to some extent. Now, it was a big jump for DeGrom last year. His previous high was 0.9 per nine, and last year it was 1.3. Maybe it drops to 1.1 this year. I don't know that I'm just going to assume he'll go back to a sub-3 ERA either.
That's that about Archer. 37 home runs on the road over his last two seasons. Because Archer had been a 330-ish ERA guy 3 years in a row. He was like Jose Quintana. I mean, he was the most predictable ERA. And then the last two seasons, it's been very high. He's been terrible on the road. And what I really don't like is that he's been terrible against his division the last two seasons. Particularly, he's been good against Toronto. But the other three teams, he's been bad. I, you know, Archer scares me because of I think the Yankees and Red Sox are going to be so good offensively. It's a little scary. Now, I looked at his schedule, and the last month is not a lot of Yankees or Red Sox. That's a good thing. The last month's kind of favorable. But getting there could be tough. I don't know if you guys care about that, but I we don't really talk about it that much. It's another reason why I like Carlos Carrasco. I think the AL Central sucks. If you take away Cleveland, he doesn't have to face Cleveland. Like, he's going to have a lot of, he's going to have much easier matchups than a guy like Chris Archer, you know what I mean? Even a guy like DeGrom, Carrasco's probably going to have easier matchups.
You've convinced me to drop Archer a little bit in that tier.
Cool. All right. Good stuff.
Like, yeah. I mean, how he goes about having, like, it's been several years in a row now where Archer's had a high ERA, and you look at his FIP and is like, why is his ERA so high? And maybe it has something to do with the strength of the opponent. You know, for a while, the Blue Jays had one of those dominant lineups. You know, the Yankees were, it was of course a dominant lineup last year, and now they're adding Stanton. The Red Sox lineup's always good. The Orioles lineup's been dominant for parts of that stretch. So, yeah, Archer's had a tough go of it there, and maybe that helps explain why the ERA's always on the high side. I don't know that it's like going to be worse than that suddenly this year. And the thing is, the strikeouts are so good that you still start him when he's facing those teams anyway. So it's not like it's limiting your starting possibilities for Archer because of those tough matchups.
I don't think it's going to be worse, but 407 in 2017 and in 2016, what was his ERA? It was close to that, right? It was
402.
Yeah. 402. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he's pretty limited. Last year, Archer was, number 17 in points, number 27 in Roto.
And unlike Jose Quintana, we thought he should win more games when he was on the White Sox, but it kind of made sense because he was on a bad team. Archer's still going to be on a bad team, so the wins probably won't be there.
If he gets traded, it could help.
Yeah, definitely rooting for him to get traded, unless I play in an AL-only league, because, you know.
Now let's go to Dallas Keuchel. Dallas Keuchel has had a sub-3 ERA in three of his last four seasons. I forgot about that. I forgot about four seasons ago he had a sub-3 ERA. What do you think about that, Heath?
Yeah, I'm not a huge Dallas Keuchel fan. I think I do have him maybe higher in points than most do because I do feel pretty confident in the wins. I feel pretty confident in the innings. His ERA could be anywhere between 2.9 and 4.1, and I wouldn't be all that surprised.
He's always hurt. I mean, when he's healthy, he's awesome. But apparently he pitched through a foot injury the second half of last season and struggled.
I wonder with guys like that, though, because it's not like he's like when you say he's always hurt. He threw 145 innings last year, 168 the year before. He was 232. When we hear a lot of times about guys are always playing through things, I wonder if they just talk about things that hurt more than others do.
Maybe. But he has played through injury each of the last two seasons.
A point I want to bring up about Keuchel, and it kind of applies to Kershaw, too, but let's just focus on Keuchel. If you want to take the average of his last 2 years and say and give him a ceiling of, say, 160 innings, the way he goes about getting those 160 innings is very different from the way, somebody like
Kyle Hendricks.
Yeah, Kyle Hendricks right. Would go get those 160 innings, where Keuchel, you know, just reading off the way he started last year, seven innings, nine innings, seven and two thirds, eight innings, like he is pitching. He is going deeper into games than you normally see, which improves his win potential, first of all. In points leagues, it means more points from the innings themselves. It means more strikeouts because, you know, we focus a lot on the rate, of course, yeah. But ultimately the rate only matters to the extent that it's applied over innings. So, that's a big deal because if he does have another DL stint like he's had the last 2 years, you're still getting production from that spot. You're just getting it from a different pitcher. So you're getting it while Keuchel's in, you're getting ace production. And while he's out, you're having to settle for something less than ace-like, but it's not like you're getting nothing. It's not like you're getting 160 total innings from that pitcher spot. Like you would, if you were doing Hendricks and he was pitching 5 to 6 innings every start.
Yeah. And I think we can include it there. I was going to add something, but I've completely forgotten it. So, Steven Strasburg. After the All-Star break, Steven Strasburg had a 0.86 ERA. He went all Jake Arrieta on us.
This is Heath. Heath can get on his soapbox now because this is like pitching coach Heath. Could have been who made Strasburg what he became last year.
He stopped using the windup, which is just basically a made-up thing that pitchers are only more comfortable with because they're made to do it when they're kids. And everybody should just pitch out of the stretch. And Alex Witt is going to pitch out of the stretch this year, and I moved him up because of that. Strasburg, though, along with Noah Syndergaard, is one of those pitchers that's not being drafted anywhere close to the big four, but could absolutely be one of the big four this year.
I was a little surprised that Strasburg's ADP is sixth. It was higher than I thought. He's going like middle of the third round. You're right. He's not going anywhere near the big four because they're going in the top 14 picks.
Right.
But he's going ahead of everyone else other than Bumgarner.
Strasburg. I can't argue with that because this is Roto ADP. And when he's just much like Syndergaard, I expect those two, for the innings that they pitch, they're going to be amongst the best in baseball.
But the funny thing is, like, he had never done this before, Strasburg. He had kind of teased us. I think this was his first sub-3 ERA in, like, a, you know, other than pitching, like, 60 innings or something like that as a rookie.
He had an exactly 3 ERA 1 year?
Yeah, yeah. It's usually low threes. But that's kind of like Carlos Martinez. Like, we all see the potential, and Strasburg's better, but, you know, we all saw the ERA and saw the potential and the stuff of Steven Strasburg, and, like, nobody's surprised that he had his best ERA. You know?
Right.
Nobody's looking at that like, oh, well, he's not this good. He's freaking awesome.
Like, in 2014, he had a 3.14 ERA, but he threw 215 innings. He was probably a top 4 or 5 pitcher then.
Last stat, and we will end the show on this. Masahiro Tanaka had the third highest swinging strike rate among qualified starting pitchers. The top 6 in swinging strike rate: Corey Kluber, Max Scherzer, Tanaka, Chris Sale, Robbie Ray, and Clayton Kershaw. One of these things is not like the other, but does that get you excited about Tanaka in 2018?
There's no way he's going to have a bounce back year, yes. I am excited about Tanaka. He's one of the most likely regression candidates in baseball.
Good regression.
Positive regression, if you'd like to call it that.
If you'd like to call it that. He doesn't like to call it that.
It's just regression.
It is just regression.
But you have to know what he's regressing to know if it's positive or negative.
It's true.
That is true.
That's a fair point.
But he was bad last year, so it's pretty easy to guess.
He was bad 2 of the last 3 years, right?
Yeah, but he has had home run issues 2 of the last 3 years.
That's true. He had a 3.51 ERA 2 years ago, so
he is an enigma to me because I feel like he should be better than he is, and maybe it will just play out as regression, like Heath hopes this year. I'm not as faithful. I guess I don't worship at the altar of regression as committedly as Heath does. But we'll see. We'll see how it plays out. Tanaka is outside of my top 20 for sure, barely inside my top 25.
I think that's pretty consistent with ADP. Tanaka is 23rd in ADP.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm 22nd, so.
Okay. Yeah, but I think people are going to debate the upside of Tanaka.
I think the upside's probably top 12.
All right, guys. That is it for this edition. We talked about the top 20, basically. We'll go through ADP and our favorite, you know, pitching staffs that we've drafted so far tomorrow. So stay tuned for that. Thank you for listening. For Scott, for Heath, I am Adam. We'll get Chris back tomorrow. Have a great day. Talk to you Wednesday.